Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of society. To those who, like me, have come to learn that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, that they cannot be fixed. Our mission, therefore, is to know who is working against our interests, to understand how and why they are doing so, because exposing and condemning such schemes isn't hateful. It's the most compassionate and caring thing we can do. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah, which means teaching, not law, because its enriching, empowering covenant provides the only reliable answer for you and your family. I know that on this network, you are offered all forms of preparedness, paraphernalia, and probably shouldn't say snake oil, but all sorts of herbal remedies that will make you just all peachy keen. But I'm here to tell you there's only one reliable offer. It is the covenant of Yahweh. I do have to take issue with this network this morning. They are offering an Easter special. This ought not to be a religious institution. If GCN wants to present itself like SRN as a religious network, then I am out of here. But they, nonetheless, in bold letters, are offering an Easter special. I do not support the worship of pagan deities or pagan religious traditions, nor the religious affinities of the Babylonians. This is a terrible thing for GCN to have done. Turning to a terrible set of events, I am saddened to tell you that in the Ukraine, there are now deaths. The Ukrainian military has shot and killed three Russians. Now, I don't know if at this point it has reached a point of no return, but it is certainly close. Russia has no choice but to intervene if ethnic Russians are going to be killed by the new, and we'll put it in quotes, government of the Ukraine. Now, in this particular case, it isn't a slam dunk that Russia is now has been given no option, because this occurred in the southeastern city of Mariupol. Now, this CNN article, and I'm just disgusted. I've got to tell you, we've reached a period of time where truth is hard to come by. And as much as I would like to resist the notion of conspiracy, because it is a great credibility cesspool, to have the media like CNN start referring to individuals as a gang when they're associated with the Russians, as terrorists when they're associated with the Russians, and not put that in quotes, and then refer to them as pro-European protesters when referring to the people doing exactly the same thing in the Ukraine, we have a serious problem. But nonetheless, in the CNN article, not quoting anyone, it says that a gang of 300 attacked a Ukrainian military base on Thursday, leading to gunfire between the two sides. The Donetsk, the self-declared chairman of the People's Council, said that he wants a referendum by May 11th to ask residents if they wanted sovereignty. Now, here we have a man that CNN wants to call a self-declared chairman of the people. And yet, when the looters and protesters and rioters in Kiev started burning buildings down, started shooting police, kidnapped police, and ultimately forced the elected government of the Ukraine out of the country, or fear of death. They were and declared to themselves a new government. It was never referred to as a self-declared government, was it? Soldiers opened fire, killing three attackers, wounding 13, and detaining 63 others, but some soldiers surrendered. It was the soldiers, not those seeking independence, that opened fire. It was those seeking independence from the Ukraine that were killed. The 25th Airborne Brigade, this is now a quote. This is a quote from the scumbag that is now running the Ukraine. And I call him a scumbag. And yes, I realize that pejorative terms maybe aren't appropriate in news reporting. But in this case, he's earned the title. His moves are pushing the world right to the precipice of war. He is calling individuals and demeaning them who acted exactly as he did, terrorists. And there's not a single terrorist act among anything they've done. And he's saying that he wants to wipe them out to the last, almost in Islamic rhetoric. And knowing full well that Russia has no choice but to defend its people. These are Russians. This territory was part of Russia for 300 years. Just 20 years ago, it was an essential component of Russia. As much part of Russia as Texas is part of the United States. Russia has no choice but to defend its people against armed attack by the government, and yet the government has chosen to put down those who want to leave the Ukraine with armed force. When Putin has made it clear, I have no interest in invading the eastern Ukraine. None. But I'll tell you, I will protect Russians. That's his job. And so when this man, the self-proclaimed, if you will, president, and they're calling him a president, of his Oleksandr Turchikov, told his parliament, guilty soldiers will stand before the court, because many of the soldiers simply surrendered. In fact, it's been the case throughout the eastern part of Ukraine that Ukrainian soldiers have started taking equipment and siding with those who don't want to be part of Ukraine, who want to be part of Russia, and they're flying Russian flags. In fact, the last time that a significant group, a battalion, if you will, of Ukrainian military personnel and armored personnel carriers approached with helicopters and the like, approached a town in the eastern Ukraine. It was the moms and dads who went out to stop them. Said, no, you're not coming here to liberate us. We don't know you. You're not welcome here. Go away. And ultimately, they surrounded them. And it would have been a bloodbath had the someone who had a lot of wisdom, and I think it's the same individual that they're declaring a self-proclaimed leader, that he intervened. And he said, I'll tell you what, I can defuse this issue. You give me the firing pins out of your rifles. I want the firing pins out of every Ukrainian military rifle that was here to besiege this town. That you can see the people don't want you here. You give me the firing pins. You can go away with your guns. No one will be hurt. And that's what occurred. But what does the president of the Ukraine say? No, guilty soldiers. They're going to stand before the court. We are on the precipice of world war. over something that should never have even been a headline in the United States. And it's all because we have maneuvered the world to the place of war, and we have responded stupidly as a nation, painting everybody in a corner for which there is no way out. A good friend of mine sent me an email yesterday and said, you know, this situation is really looking scary. Like, you know, you got Russia saying that they're going to committed to fight on behalf of every ally. And they're calling the new government, if you want to call it a government, of Ukraine an ally. And they're moving all manner of weaponry in position to start a war. And you've got the President of the United States doing everything he can to put the Russians in a position economically where they have no option. And you realize that based upon the leaked conversations between American diplomats, that we instigated this. That even now, as we speak, the director of the CIA is in Kiev. The head of NATO has been in and out of Kiev. NATO is nothing but a puppet of America. It's a tragic situation. And by creating the unrest in the Ukraine and Kiev, by encouraging the protesters, and by ramping up their protest to the point that the military in the Kiev had to respond. And it wasn't the military, it was their policing units, which are the very people that have responded now in the East against the government. That by prompting that, by promoting that, we put the world right at the precipice of World War III. And so when my friend wrote me and I said, this is where we're headed. And I know I hope we don't end up there. Putin hopes we don't end up there. But I swear, based upon our rhetoric and our maneuvering, it's as if the United States wants this war. Think of the consequence. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. As we look at the Ukraine, there are lots of issues. But before I get to the issues, what I'd like to convey is something I have never shared as part of this program or anything that I have written that has concerned me for some time and now has me very concerned. And it had me very concerned that when Obama nearly started World War III, when he wanted to bomb Damascus for an attack that was obviously perpetrated by the rebels that he was providing rockets to, as opposed to the Assad regime. And he was going to fly American missiles and warplanes over the Russian fleet to bomb Damascus. It would have started World War III. And my concern then was, I had always thought that the Magog War, which is the ongoing assault against Israel that we will see come to fruition right after the fall of Damascus and the fall of the Syrian government and the divestiture of the West Bank in Israel, that would be the prelude to World War III. And it's a prelude to World War. And Yahweh stops the Muslim invasion, wiping out Islam. But at that point, he turns his attention to America and provides a stern warning and has to declare that he himself has stopped America. It's malfeasance. So that appeared to me, it clearly is, an Islamic assault against Israel that goes global. But I had assumed that that would be the next war, the next world war. There's a possibility that's not the case. Well, that is clearly going to happen, and exactly as Yahweh has predicted. In fact, the evidence for it now is such that it is inevitable. But when Yosha talked to us about the signs, the birth pangs that would occur before his return. In the Olivet Discourse on the Mount of Olives, the first thing on his list of the birth pangs was World War. And so, having that perspective, I assumed that the World War that he was talking about was the world's only World War, which was World War II. And the reason I call it the only World War is that World War I was really a regional war. It was primarily a European conflict. You know, it involved a little bit of the Middle East because the Ottoman Turks and the Russians got into it, and the British decided that they would see if they could use the opportunity to seize the Ottoman Empire. So I looked at World War II as that war, and that still may be the case. Gosh, I hope that's the case. But the birth pangs go on from there, and there is the possibility that he was speaking of another world war prior to all of these things occurring. And the way that the Obama administration, and I can't just blame the Obama administration, because it's every numbskull that's in Congress. It's every nincompoop we have wearing fancy military garb. It's our State Department. It's our CIA. It's the NSA. It's top to bottom in this government of ours. They're pushing the world towards war. It's as if they covet war. That's happened a lot in the past. Wars give government leaders and military leaders ultimate power, ultimate authority. They become de facto dictators. It enriches them. It empowers them. It turns them into great heroes. And it appears that even the newspapers and the media are going along with this. That sells a lot of newspapers, you know. It's a dying industry. I'm concerned that that's where we're headed. Now, I hope that's not the case. I hope that it doesn't happen that way. But I'm telling you that with the Chernikov deploying Ukrainian troops against the Russian separatists in the eastern Ukraine, and they're in control. The Russian separatists are in control of a dozen, maybe even a score of cities. And the people have sided with them. And to send troops after them and to call them terrorists and to shoot and kill them is absolutely going to bring Russia in. Russia will have no choice. They will intervene to protect their people. And then what? Based upon what we've heard, NATO will engage. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have created a scenario that is impossible for Russia. We have accused Russia vocally. I mean, the NATO, the administration, State Department, Congress has all accused Russia of using its troops to destabilize the eastern Ukraine, that accusing Russia of providing the armaments and the troops that are involved in destabilizing the eastern Ukraine. It's not true. We know it's not true. There's a lot of media here. And they're meeting with, filming, talking to the parties that are sparring. There's absolutely no evidence of it. It's untrue. But we're accusing him of doing what we're painting him in a corner to the point where he's going to have to do what we're accusing him. And then the very politicians in America that have lied to everyone, saying that he was doing this, they're going to say, see, we're right. But by accusing him of doing what he hasn't done, when he does what he must do, rather than admit that they lied, that they literally pushed Russia into war, they're going to pretend like they've been exonerated. First to lead the parade will be Senator John McClown of Arizona. Abomination will be right after him. Maybe side by side. This is a horrible set of circumstances, folks. And I'm not sure it's resolvable. Even Putin said yesterday, or maybe even today because of the time difference. I think it was today. Someone needs to figure this one out. We've got to resolve this issue. I mean, we are right on the precipice of war, of world war. Man, it's time to defuse it. And the moment the protest arose in the Ukraine, the first thing I did is said, all right, what's the history? The first thing I did is I realized that Putin used the term, it says when the protesters in the Ukraine and Kiev became so belligerent and they became so violent, he says, you know, it reminds him of the pogroms, which is the Russian word for disgustingly, repulsively violent actions against civilians. It's their word for terrorism on steroids. This is ruthless, perverted, vicious terrorism. And, of course, in the history of the Ukrainians, it's the world's worst cases of anti-Semitism prior to the rise of Adolf Hitler. And even during Adolf Hitler's time, the Ukrainians were the most celebrated collaborators in terms of the persecution and mass murder of Jews. And so you have a character issue there. And then began to study the history of financial dealings with Ukraine in the 20 years that it had been independent of Russia. And it's just a legacy of deadbeats and lies. I looked at their economy. Same thing. Then I studied the pipeline that goes through the Ukraine, figured out how dependent Europe was on it, how much Europe would covet it if they could gain control of it. And studied then the history of the transactions regarding that pipeline between the now 20-year independent Ukraine and Russia. And there's 8-ish instances of the Ukrainians cheating, siphoning off gas, not paying their bills. And each time the Ukrainian says, not our fault, it's the Russians who are falsely accusing us, the case would go to the international tribunals and the evidence would all be against the Ukrainians. And they would say, okay, you caught us. We were guilty. So give us a discount and we'll go on. And let's come up with terms we can live with. And the Russians would come up with new terms, give them a discount, and they cheat all over again. Deny it, get caught. There's 8 instances of them being deadbeats on this. They're deadbeats right now. They owe the Russians $2 billion. The Russians are not going to forgive that debt and continue to send fuel there that is siphoned off when Europe is trying to turn Ukraine into a NATO country. Not going to do that. They have to do something. If they shut off the pipeline, Europe, much of it goes dark. And didn't think this through. We realized the issues that are at stake. Russia's in a position where there is no good option. They can't allow the gas to continue to flow when they're not being paid, when they're owed $2 billion, and when the Ukraine is trying to merge with Europe and NATO. They can't do that. And if they shut off the pipeline, it's a crisis for much of Europe. Why didn't we think this through? And then you looked at the ethnicity and the history and realized that the Ukraine has been part of Russia for 300 years and that its attempted independence has been an unmitigated disaster, especially for the Ukrainians. And now they're reaching out to the World Bank expecting another bailout, this one $25 billion, when the 4 loans they've had from the World Bank previously, they've reneged on all of them. And then you do a demographic study and you realize that about 30 to 40% of the Eastern Ukrainians are ethnic Russians, as you would expect. It was just like Texans would consider themselves Americans, at least most would. It was equivalent of Texas for Russia for centuries. And you looked at Crimea, not only with a naval base, but it's 70 to 80% Russian. It was obvious that the first thing that was going to happen as a result of the coup in Kiev was that Crimea was going to be part of Russia. That was obvious. It was inevitable. Why even fixate over it? The fact that it was accomplished without a shot is brilliant. We should have been thrilled, celebrating. But instead, the world pushed Russia into a corner, condemning Russia, vilifying Russia, making Putin look like he's the new Saddam Hussein, the new Adolf Hitler, the new Stalin. This is not the kind of rhetoric that a peace-loving nation that wants people to have autonomy ought to be engaged in. And now with the Eastern Ukraine. What the Eastern Ukrainians want is a referendum. Not in the whole of the Ukraine. They don't want the whole of the Ukraine. In the Eastern Ukraine. It was obvious that a referendum needed to take place in the eastern part of the Ukraine and let those in the eastern part of Ukraine decide who they want to be with. The failed nation of the Ukraine, or do they wish to be with Russia? Back again. But the positioning of NATO, the positioning and the rhetoric of the United States in this regard has pushed Putin in a position where he says, I don't want to respond, but I may soon have no choice. And if the incident that we saw take place in the eastern Ukraine yesterday, with Russians being killed, continues, Russia will invade to protect Russians. It must. And then what? What will NATO do then? We ought to be very, very concerned that our country is out of control and that it is leading us to the doorstep of world war. And you might say, oh, but, you know, the Russians, their military is tiny and antiquated compared to the United States. And we'd whoop them. And we'd have every American except those who aren't ignorant and irrational waving the flag and supporting their president and supporting the troops and volunteering and going off to war. But the carnage would be catastrophic. You know, if the United States just thinks that it can go to war against Russia and not destroy the United States in the process, it's crazy. Yes, can the U.S. military destroy the Russian military? Yeah, absolutely. But at what cost? It will absolutely, unequivocally bankrupt the United States in the process. And what then? The United States has military, absolutely cannot occupy or invade Russia. Can't do it. Couldn't even do it in Iraq, a nation of, 20 million people? We couldn't do it in Afghanistan. We can't do it. Then what? You know, it's easy to start a war, but then what? You know, it's like Iraq with the U.S. military. It was easy to start the war, but we just made a mess of things. In Vietnam, it was easy to start the war, but we made a mess of things. In Afghanistan, really easy to start the war, but we made a bad situation worse. We have Glenn on the line. Maybe he can give us some insights here as to, or either tell me where I'm my evidence and reason is wrong here, and this is not a serious concern, or maybe you agree. What have you to say, Glenn?
Well, no, you stumbled upon something that I found myself trying to persuade Christians about, especially dispensational Christians awaiting the rapture for many, many years. You know, well, they always expect, like, the next big event to be there to take it out. And I'm like, hold on there a minute. You do realize that a lot of really bad stuff can occur before your elevator arrives, right? And it's very hard. And like, you know, even though your position, you know, you thought that through, you're kind of aware of that. But when we start to assume that we know the next prophetic event, we realize, wait a minute, other bad things can happen before what I'm thinking
about. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in the past, Glenn, and I hear the music faintly in the background here, but in the past, I've had the tendency to jump from to the next really big events, not recognizing we could have a world war before then. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. In your discussions on with dispensationalist Pauline Rapture Christians, and you coming to the conclusion that really bad things are going to happen, even if they're right, and they're not on dispensationalism, and they're not right on the rapture either. But even if Christians were right about either of those two things, then your position would still be extraordinarily true, which is that this world's going to become despicable. I mean, it's going to become a horrible place to exist. Yesterday, Glenn, I was, my free time, I was translating Daniel. Daniel means God judges and vindicates. He's the prophet that was a vassal but also a slave in Babylonia, living in Babylon. And he was given a prophetic picture of what was going to happen during the last days. And yesterday, one of the words that I came upon speaks of this in a way. This is now Gabriel, who's the mighty one of Yahweh. And it says, and he said, and now this is kind of interesting here. Gabriel fell on his, you know, he was terrified by Gabriel because, you know, messenger of
character.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're mortal and physical and this character comes down that is glowing because he's light, you know, it's pretty imposing. And so Daniel just fell on his face. He was terrified. And so this is how this conversation begins.
And by the way, he was a fairly righteous guy. We're talking about a relatively righteous person who's scared.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
More afraid a wicked person should be.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. in fact, this is really interesting. I'll go back a bit because I was just going to describe the word that Yahweh used to depict the last days. Here it says, while I, Daniel, was seeing and considering the revelation, and this was the second revelation that Daniel had about the future of nations and the future of world history, really, playing out before his eyes. And he says, and I desired and I sought understanding. So Daniel said, okay, I've seen this vision. I'd really like to understand it. And he says, and behold, present and standing before me, similar to the appearance of an exceptional individual being, a Geber. I heard it's always interesting. God always provides the means to understand every name. Like here he says, Geber is an especially capable and empowered male individual with some human characteristics. Gabriel is a combination of Geber and El. So it's the exceptional, capable, and empowered male individual with human characteristics. It is associated with Yahweh. So anyway, I heard the voice associated with a person providing understanding and making connections within Ule. Ule is the place where Daniel was taken to see the second revelation. And he, Gabriel, combination of Geber and El, provided an invitation to be called out and to meet by saying, understand, making the information making an informed and reasonable connections to approach according to this the pattern of clear and comprehensible revelations. And he came, positioning himself right beside me. But in the process of coming to me, I became terrified, which is ba'ath. I became overwhelmed, trembling. So I fell prostrate on my face. Okay, that's what he said. He said, I fell prostrate, I fell flat on my face. And he said to me, use the ability to closely examine and carefully consider information to comprehend. I want you to be able to teach and instruct, making connections which lead to understanding. O child of man, O son of man, because indeed the prophetic revelation is for events that will transpire toward the very end of time. Then in the process of sharing the word with me, while I was laying face down on the ground, my face in the dirt, literally, he touched me. And he helped me stand up. He helped me and encouraged me, assisted me, so that I could stand forever. He, with me, was right there, upright, alongside God, at my assigned post. And then he said, look at me. I'm going to help you come to know and understand. And we'll consider how that plays into the horrible events awaiting humankind.